Log Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening. I'd like to welcome you all to the Stop Child Abuse Now show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Sarasota, Florida. I'm also an adult survivor of child abuse, and as you know, tonight is Tuesday, February 27th, 2024. This is SCAN number, and SCAN stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. This is SCAN number 3386, and about 30 minutes after tonight's show, this SCAN will be archived and available on our website to listen and to stream from now into the future. So please make note that this is scan number 3386. We have a very special type of show tonight. It's our open mic survivor professional night. We have our incredible NASCA family member and co-host, Pastor Deborah Schleich. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Pastor Deborah in a few moments before I bring her on. But I first wanted to tell you a little bit more about NASCA and what NASCA is all about, because as you know, our focus is on child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'd like to share our mission statement. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo at discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal of offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. You can find out more about NASCA and also access our resources provided on our website at www.nasca, which is NASCA.org. So I'd like to tell you a little bit more about tonight's show. As I mentioned, it's a Q&A call and discussion with a survivor professional. We use an open mic forum. We'll feature our co-host, who will field topics brought to this episode by you, the listener. So please call in and join our panel. The number to do that is area code 646-595-2118. So again, all you need to do is dial the number, area code 646-595-2118. I will meet you on our back line, which is private, and welcome you into the show. And once you a panel member on the show, you'll have an opportunity to ask Pastor Deborah, our special guest, a question or a comment regarding the material she's covering with us this evening. So let me tell you a little bit more about Pastor Deborah. She grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill, and now our Pastor Deborah Schleich is a survivor professional. She lives in Pensacola, Florida, and she's changed She's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker. All of this in one. She volunteers with many community organizations as well. To quote Pastor Deborah, she says, "I can minister by text, phone, Skype, in person, and however the Lord directs her 24/7. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and the physical body, and believes that all three are important and that each area needs care. And we look forward to Pastor Deborah being an active member of the Nazca family for a very long time. So on these episodes, we welcome various co-hosts and survival professionals who will assist in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. Their trauma-informed perspectives as survival professionals helps them guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from questions and topics brought to us by our listeners. So everyone is invited to engage in tonight's show. Once again, the number is area code 646-595-2118. So Pastor Deborah, I'm going to unmute your mic and to let you know we have a caller who's called in who is just listening. And we have a caller, Melanie, who is also a NASA family member who is becoming a part of our host team. Her name is Melanie. I've unmuted her mic as well. So you've got several of us here on the panel. And I have to apologize. I have horrible, horrible allergies. I know you live in Florida, Pensacola, Florida. Pastor Deborah, I'm in Sarasota, Florida, and I did not realize that I would be so affected by the allergies here. So I do apologize for my raspy voice, but I'm going to turn it over to you now and just wish to express on behalf of NASCA our appreciation for having you here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Penelope. Yeah, I'm Pastor Deborah. I've been with NASCA I don't know how many years now. I've written some video blogs, made some for them, and some articles. And coming out of being a licensed clinical mental health counselor and nationally certified as one, I have a unique perspective from the mental health counseling world and the spiritual pastoral world. So I'm able to combine a lot of knowledge and education in those two areas as far as what the causes of abuse, what happens, how to get healing. I work with a lot of, as you said, community organizations, done a lot of support groups, done a lot of personal ministry, as you'd call it, we'd call it counseling, mental health counseling. I've been in a rehab hospital, chaplain in a hospital, in the emergency room, sexual abuse response team, work with the military, jails, homeless, pretty much children, teens, adults, you know, just about everything. Been in the jails, working with girls and guys, and working in inpatient drug counseling programs. So I have a very broad perspective of helping people. And, you know, also from a hospital side. So I just have so much knowledge and education. But what I wanted to talk about tonight was something I've been working on, a podcast I just started on YouTube. Got several things up that also can be on YouTube Music. And it's about the oppressed spirit. Because the topic for tonight is called The Darkness of Abuse and How Light Comes In. And what people don't realize what happens with childhood abuse is when the biological body is affected. Things that would normally grow and develop at the normal rate of maturity suddenly get changed. Chemicals, hormones get turned on, released. Things happen before sort of the mind is ready to understand it. Darkness sets in. Ignorance sets in. Sort of the light goes out. Standing of, you know, what is going on. And in the realm of the spirit part of us, that eternal part. You might recognize it in your dreams or something like that. There's darkness in there that means lack of knowledge, light. Your spirit can actually be asleep a lot of the times. And your soul, that is supposed to be very active and, you know, reflective, interactive in the world, sometimes it gets into darkness, which it gets into numbness. And a lot of people don't recognize as a child the gift that is given to us to help us is we form multiple personalities. And the core part of us, that the little child, sort of goes into a trance, a sleep, a darkness. And it takes some love and light coming in slowly inside to our soul and our mind. And most of the time you can't believe it, you know. And the people that are trying sometimes to help you, you know, you can't trust them. I just had a young guy from over in the Middle East. I'm working with him. And he is of the Islamic religion. And he contacted me because he has a friend that's having surgery. And his question to me was, can I trust you? But he's not asking that of me. He's really asking that of, you know, I don't serve Allah. He does. But he's asking me, the one that I pray to and talk about as a pastor, can he be trusted with, you know, in prayer? So a lot of times I have to read between people's lines, you know, what they're asking. And I have to understand darkness. And I have to understand what happened in childhood abuse. And understand childhood trauma and how it affects us biologically. I had to understand triggers. Had to understand child development, which was one of my classes. I didn't do all that well in, but we had child development in our graduate programs. And how the mental health community looked at child abuse, you know, in both children and adults. And then working in the psychiatric hospitals with it and working with people who have, you know, been abused as children, end up as criminals, and, you know, homelessness. So it is a wonderful thing if you can find somebody who has a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, sort of older, that can help you through a recovery process, a healing process, and help you as you go through your life. So I'll open it up to any questions so far from anybody on the panel or that wants to ask a question.
Hi, Pastor Deborah.
Uh-huh.
My name is Melanie, and I am also
Hi, Melanie.
A survivor. Hi, and I'm also a Christian with not as much ministry background as you, but I really, really value your wide and vast experience. A couple questions came to me as soon as you started talking. One was, I was curious about what you feel with your vast amount of experience has been the most effective form of therapy for trauma survivors.
Okay. It's when you use the word therapy, okay, that's the mental health world.
Right.
Okay. What the mental health world teaches people with master's degrees is they are aware of abuse. They know there's chemical problems and things are not very calm on the inside. And they know there's lack of memories. Their training is that if you can recover the memories and sort of cry through the loss of the childhood and remember what happened and tell your therapist, they believe that catharsisism of tears and healing and remembering, it's you are on the step and road to good mental health. Because you're not anxious or irritable, something's knocking on a door, but now you know what's really happened to you. And maybe you now can face it. Okay. So in mental health, their goal is to get you to remember. Now, I work with psychiatrists very well. And there's their medical, this one, he's passed away now. He did not believe in hypnotizing anybody to get to the deep subconscious memories. Because he said, if I did and I asked you what happened, he said, I would feel like I am raping you again in your memory. And I won't do that to you. So some people have different philosophies about child abuse. I can tell you there's not a lot of training in mental health work.
Mm-hmm.
Because they mainly go off into anxiety. And let's get you some medication. Or we'll do some desensitization to whatever you're fearful of. Or depression. Okay, because there's some chemical imbalance. So they find out you've got some sadness, you're depressed. Oh, your chemicals are imbalanced. Let's get you some medication. Mental health therapy doesn't last very long. If you are employed by a company, I used to see some, you get employee assistance. You get 3, maybe, or 6 trips to the therapist that your company pays for. That's it. Okay. If you're with vocational rehabilitation, you've got some kind of physical thing, they'll pay for some to get you so you can go to work. But their main goal, the master's level people and the psychologists, I used to give the neuropsychological testing. I gave you the IQ testing. I gave you the brain testing. We're going to find out your depression levels. Are you psychotic? What is going on? By your answers. Then they're going to refer you to a psychiatrist to get you some medication. Now go back to work, go back to school, have a life. And all of the psychiatrist level really is, are you doing okay on your medication? Are you eating right? And it's like, okay, your chemistry in your brain is balanced out. Now you can be in therapy, or if you have some grief issues about this, mental health counselors, there's not a lot of classes in how to do healing with child abuse victims. And most child abuse people, kids, they try to take them to the abusers to court. I was a family advocate. I sat in the family law. I was the eyes and the ears for a judge. I heard the stories. I saw the parents. I visited the children. You know, it's a mess. And the goal of the state and the family law is to return the children back to the parents. That's pretty much about it, and move on. And the caseloads are just so tremendous. The powers that be, the state, they don't want to terminate the parental rights. They'll pass the children to auntie, to grandma, to granny, to a cousin in another state, keep it in the family, because that's what's best for the child. And there's play therapy. I did play therapy with children. Let's play, and you talk and sort of talk about what happened, okay? And they believe that by you talking, you're getting healing. Well, I tried all that. And then I got taken off into helping people still from a different perspective, okay? And the perspective was, first I had to realize that we have 3 parts. We have a physical body that gets affected by abuse. It's an organ, the skin, nerves, pain or pleasure. We have all kinds of hormones, chemicals in our brains that run the gamut. That get triggered, you know, by sounds and smells and everything. And you're right back in the memory. At a master's level, you do not get any training at multiple personalities, disassociation. You get none of that. And very few psychologists deal with that. And you may not even know you have them. Okay, but then I had the next level back in about 1995, the spiritual part. I started seeing things, okay, and doing what you would call personal ministry, deliverance type, breaking soul ties, doing understanding things from a spiritual context, ancestors, all kinds of things. And I ran into this so often. I was working in a crisis stabilization unit at Lakeview Center in Pensacola. There was a precious young black guy. And we were talking. I take my board in with the three little gingerbread and, you know, say we're a spirit, we're a soul, and a physical body, all in one package. And he was saying that he was there in this crisis stabilization unit because he felt he was under spiritual attack. And I said, what do you mean? He said, my parents and family worship voodoo. I don't want to worship voodoo. I want to worship God. But I feel like I'm being attacked from them because I don't want to do that. Now, what would you do with that in the mental health counseling world? No religions are taught in the mental health counseling world. There is nothing about pastoral care. Most pastors get nothing about child abuse. They don't understand it. They don't, you know, they have no clue. So I was kind of alone in my studying. I read a lot of true stories, watched a lot of videos, and I had a lot of personal experience with people out of the deep, multi-generational, satanic world. Deep people who had multiple personal Manchurian candidates, if you want to call them. People that were into witchcraft, the occult, people that were New Age, psychics, people they were doing what you would call astral projection, placing curses on. I was thrown into that world right from the get-go. And there's nothing taught in mental health counseling how to deal with that. So I had to learn fast. I had to study. And I had to look and pay attention to people and places and things like that. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I already know about all of that stuff is the ministry world is ill-informed, that the scientific world is narrow-minded and not spiritually informed. Like, I totally hear what you're saying. Can I completely switch lanes and ask you another question?
Sure.
Something that has been highlighted for me lately, just very recently, like just yesterday, and I'm really curious. I'm sure it's common. I feel like this was sort of, I was blindsided by something that seems so obvious. I was in a class where they were talking about shame and regret, and I was thinking to myself, oh, I don't have either of those things until they started talking some more. And I had dealt with shame from the actual act of abuse, but I just sort of unearthed a new kind of shame yesterday that I didn't know was there. And maybe what I want to hear from you is if this is, you know, if you hear this a lot, I just unearthed this new kind of shame and regret that I really feel almost a shame from God. I've had so many bad things happen. Like, what did I do that was so wrong? And I know mentally this is not my theology, but in my heart or in my spirit, I was feeling shame. Like, I must be some sort of outcast or second class citizen of heaven for God to let so many things like this happen. And like I said, in my head, I know I don't think that, but I think I have been carrying shame around. Like, I don't know if I'm even saying this very clearly or not. I feel like I'm carrying shame
good.
That is
good.
Different.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. It's different
you're
from
doing good
the act.
With it. Okay.
Please, this is
happened?
A shame. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, typically as children. Believe it or not, most children, they believe in something. And they feel dirty. Shame makes you feel dirty, that you have dishonored yourself in front of other people's eyes. And typically, if you uncovered another shame, it could be another part of yourself. And the enemy, okay, of us, this is the spiritual part, wants us to feel that so we can't feel the love of a wonderful Heavenly Father. And we're not, let's say, healed, and we live in this darkness, this ignorance of what the truth is. Shame, okay, brings depression. I'm dirty. I'm not worthy. You have all these kind of different, I'm no good. Nobody would love me. You know, what's the use? There is an enemy of humanity that wants us to think that way in our soul and to feel that way and in our spirit also. And how I can relate this is I would run into the multiple personalities. I had this one precious young lady. She's still my spiritual daughter. I adopt everybody. And she was doing ministry. She lived with me. And she immediately, we were talking, and she runs under the bed. I said, what's going on? She was, and a part had come up. She was naked. She was embarrassed, ashamed. Because in her world that she grew up in as a child, being naked, being abused sexually, that was a part of their life. And I knew it was a multiple personality part. So now she had her clothes on, okay? But the part that was up felt naked, ashamed of being seen. So I just reached my hand under the bed and I said, what kind of clothes would you like to wear? She said, some black leather. I said, okay. And I put my empty hand, said, here's the clothes. You put them on and come on out. I had to learn how to minister and understand every emotion, fear, anger, guilt, shame, regret that happened. That's the darkness, and it's piled up on a child. Most of the time, they don't know what to do with it when they're children. But when the acts are happening, and if it's over and over again, different parts of you will carry the shame, different ages of the child, okay? If it happens, you know, in infancy or something, you'll have a part in that. I had this one lady. We'd be on the phone, and I would hear her whimpering. She had brought to me a part of herself that was a little baby covered in blood from the satanic stuff. Held it in my voice on the phone. Had to carry, hold, speak, love, cleanse, wipe off. Now, what am I doing? I'm doing ministry work to a deep part of her on the telephone, cleaning a part of her that is ugly, you know, nasty. So in mental health work, a lot of therapists are not used to doing it. You got 50 minutes, and you're taking notes, and you have to take notes so in case you end up in court because you get sued, you've got notes. You're always looking at your clock. And most of them aren't trained. They don't understand. Maybe a part's come up and they're crying. They don't know to look. The system, I had to learn to understand that. So I had to combine the two. There's sometimes I'm on the phone for hours and different parts are coming up. And I have to do ministry. How would you have... And I had my voice had to carry the healing and bring the light. And so what you would find is all of these, we'll call them abnormal, unhealthy feelings, shame, regret, anger, will come up at different times. they can be connected to different parts of your identity, and something gets remembered, and they come up, and they're just angry at everything. And they give you a piece of your mind, and I have to understand. My ministry work is talking. My voice had to be a gentle light, a gentle voice. And it had to do it over the phone, in Walmart, in a car. I did most of my, call it personal ministry, spiritual stuff, on the phone, in my home, in a car. I didn't have an office, okay? You go into the jail and you're dealing with people in an open system where there's sheriffs and television. I'm having to do ministry there, in the jail system, in a homeless shelter. Okay, I had to learn how. I didn't have, once I stepped out of the mental health world and the hospitals, I didn't have an office anymore. It was 24/7. Sometimes I get calls in the middle of the night. It was just by phone. So I had to learn that my voice was what was important. And how I addressed, that I had to have knowledge of the system. And so what God did for me was, it's sort of like a mental health counseling. If you study depression, or adults with depression or anxiety or marital problems, you put yourself out. But that is your area of expertise. So the people that come to you have those kind of problems. Well, I knew that that's sort of how it worked. And so everybody that was going to come into my purview, into my phone, or meet at Walmart, or in dreams, or praying for, we all have some deep spiritual problems paired. I love the Catholic Church. They say believe in doing what we call exorcism. And I had to study a lot of that. Deliverance work, I had to study a lot of things that most pastors don't even believe in. I had to study mental health. So my training was just so different. And so, yes, you can have many times different levels of shame will come up that you don't know about. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. And I salute you. I mean, the kind of ministry you've been doing and the places you've just made yourself so available to be used by God. And I thank you.
Okay.
It's inspirational.
Well, here's how it worked. If everybody has a purpose. I started loving when I was a young child. Teenagers, some of the weirdest people. People in wheelchairs, different skin colors. I was in the South. That just, people go, well, how can you do that? I go, I don't know. I just love them. And I'd give that love out during the day, you know, be friends with them. And God would fill me up at night. Didn't understand it. I was brought up in a military family. We were soldiers, disciplined, highly educated. My job was to set captives free around the world. Okay, that's what a soldier does. And to lay down your life, give up everything. I didn't live a normal life. I don't care about sports and entertainment and stuff and all of that. Because a soldier's life is different. So I had that in my background. And I wanted to help people. So psychology at that time was sort of it. You know, I really didn't like social work because they only believed back then in the 70s that if I can change your education, get you a better house, get your medical taken care of, your social things, you'll be healed. Mental health, psychology, psychiatry says there's something wrong with your brain. Okay, could have had a brain, you know, hit on the head. Could have had some, you know, genetic stuff, okay? Something could have happened to you. And you're having some, your chemistry in your brain, your neurochemistry, I had to study the brain, is off. And if we can get some medicine to it that will balance out the chemicals, and we can get you eating right, you know, and get off some of the sugar and the salt and stuff and the alcohol, okay, we can get your brain sort of back to normal where you can think, and you will sort of be normal. Okay, so, all right. So I had that kind of background, and then I started just, I would be in a church service, and they would be praising and worshiping and everything, and everybody was thanking the Lord and asking for blessings, and all I did was cry, because I said, God, you don't have to do anything else for me. I'm on my way. I'll be there when I get there. But there were so many people in the occult and heavy metal rock and roll and witches and crime families. And now it's all those people in El Salvador, and there's people who didn't know you. They're on their way the other way. And I would cry and cry and cry and cry. I did it all day today. And I'd cry for God to send somebody to help them. And he said, I'm sending you. And I thought, I don't know where they are. What am I supposed to do? Travel the world? Get on an airplane? Who are they? I don't know. He said, I'll teach you. I'll train you. So I went on a fast track. I lost my mental health job. I have no job, no money, no identity, no professional identity, no office, nothing. I even tried to get a job as a Christian counselor, because that was the big thing back then. Because people who were Christians wanted to get mental health therapy, and they wanted prayer and stuff. Well, there was no counsel. I tried that in the church. That didn't work, because I wasn't going to do that. And once I got, God said, I'll teach you. I joined the prayer team at the church, the deliverance team. I had to read some of the horriblest books. I read stories, saw videos. It was just, and I just kept to myself, and I knew God was in a hurry. So I would read 6 to 8 books, watch videos and movies. I got very little sleep. And then I guess whenever I was ready, God allowed the people to come in. They came on assignment to kill me. Because when you start caring for people, okay, we'll call them the servants of evil. We'll call them the human traffickers, the child abusers. When you start caring so much for them, and praying that God will touch them and change them, earthquakes start happening on the other side. The enemy of humanity gets upset and gets mad. I experienced it. I have been shot at, poisoned from my own home. I have been almost stabbed with scissors in my own home by a girl that I was trying to help. I have almost been kidnapped, all to stop me from loving. People will say, in witchcraft, heavy metal music, people that, gangs, drug cartels. So I had personal experiences that most people just didn't have. And God had to test me, and he had to try me, see, could I hold, could I not flinch? You know, I had to hear him. Now, I used all my mental health, and I asked God, I said, don't waste that either, okay, over there. Don't waste any of that, because that's good knowledge, okay, good stuff. And combine them, and that's just what I've been doing since probably 1995. And now I have a YouTube channel where I put up all these stories, and this topic was about the oppressed spirit, which I got some inspiration from Dr. Miles Monroe, the Bahamas Faith Ministries, tying in what is an oppressed spirit and an oppressed soul. So I've had to study Nigerian candidates. How do people get like this? What causes somebody to abuse a child? What is going on with parenting? Okay. Is it genetics? I had to help on the helplines with suicide. I've taken guns and machetes off of people in church. I was the soldier in me was never afraid. Okay? And people needed love. And but I had to get through some stuff. So Bill found me out on LinkedIn, and he asked me, you know, to come and be a guest, sort of. So are there any more questions?
I was going to ask you what the name of your YouTube channel is.
It's called The Hidden Kingdoms. There's almost 1,000 videos. There's 3 or 4 that go up every week. of a YouTube shorts that go up under Pastor Declan. I'll get 100 or 200 views on those YouTube shorts. I have YouTube podcasts and YouTube music and LinkedIn. And I'm on Twitter. I call it Twitter. I have a website. And what I learned is people got issues, but they need teaching. And a lot of people don't understand. Once you identify yourself as a victim of child abuse, you can get settled in that victimhood. And that is who you are now. And everything that goes with being a victim, the anger, the shame, the regret, either. Here's what I ask people. Okay, something bad happened to you when you were a child. You're not a child anymore. Now, I have a question for you. One, do you want to be healed? And, you know, they go, yeah. I'll go, all right. Then you can never say, because in spiritual work, you get born again. That means the new you never had child abuse. I went through this. You never got, those are not your parents, those are not your family, you were never sexually abused. The new you. And you can never be triggered by that stuff. That's a powerful transformation, healing. But some people get attached to the victim identity. That's all they know. They don't like it. But they now get Social Security disability. They don't want to give that up. They get a lot of benefits out there from the government. They don't want to give that up. They get a lot of secondary psychological support. That's who they are now. And they're going to give it up. Now, I've been through a powerful, I used to be called Jan, who had a horrible life. And she died. I put her in the grave. But to me, Pastor Deborah came up and she can use those memories, but that's not her life. The mental health world. But some people don't want to give up. They're too afraid. They're afraid of what would life be. I don't know the rules. I got to give up my multiple personality system. I have to give up the drugs, the alcohol, the bingo. I have to change my diet, maybe lose weight, become a new person. I can't say that I'm an adult survivor anymore. I can't say I'm a victim if I get healed. I don't have who would I be. So there's identity. But in the healing process, every person who has had child sexual abuse has multiple personalities. They disassociate. They leave their bodies. It's called astral projection. Their spirit leaves. It left during the abuse time. They form the multiple personalities. They have them. They have a system in there. And and somehow, you know, you'll get some that'll kind of go to work, be married, have a family, business, go to church. And in the occult world, you would have a light side personality system that could be in the church, be a school teacher, a policeman, a politician, and you'd never know. And they got a dark side, a whole mess of stuff that you never know was there. And I just didn't talk to anybody because it was too unbelievable, a lot of the stuff. And working with people, I had to know they were checking the light out. They were in darkness. They were checking my voice out. They were checking the thought I believed in out. They were checking, can I really be healed? Well, how do I get along with my family? Who will I be? There was a lot of fear, you know, of being healed, and there was a lot of questions, but they wouldn't ask you, but I had to know. And some of them, I had this one guy named Chris, sweet young guy, he was a drummer in a heavy metal music band, and I would send him cards into satanic meetings, and he'd get all mad and throw them away. I'd sent teddy bears out to counts in England. I've worked with, I don't talk to anybody about it. And he was so afraid to let love, that's the healing agent, touch him. Because he had heard about love. He had, oh, I love you, and just an abuse and stuff. And there's all kind of dark love and perverse love, you know, and kind of wicked, evil love. Oh, I love you, honey. Let me beat you up. I love you, you know, domestic violence. Okay? And it took him years before he would even allow, before he could put his guard down and let my voice carry love, and he could believe that he was loved. Because they go, I'm too evil, I'm too wicked, I've done too many bad, evil, wicked things, and there's no hope for me. I had to believe there was a love deeper. And some of them accepted it right away. Some had heard when they were children in the occult that they would find somebody that would love them, and they went looking. I have had, I just put up two stories. One's called Josh and Matthew, young men I work with. One, Josh, he died early, and so did Matthew. Matthew was coming, was leaving Louisiana to come to Pensacola and find me. He got shot and killed. And I cried out to God, did we lose him? He goes, no, I got him, because he believed. I had to learn how to deal with death and torture and abuse. I had to trust God that he was working. So I've had, but I don't talk to, I didn't talk to most ministers. You know, most of my life is not spent around other, I don't fit on community Christians, but they don't open up with prayer. They don't believe in the spiritual stuff. They're trapped in the mental health world. I can fit in the mental world. When I was going to go into the crisis stabilization unit of Lakewood, Lakeview Center as a chaplain, the PhD psychologist asked me, could I cast out devil? I said, yes, sir, no problem. They want it, but they're afraid of it. But there's some that believe that, you know, they're trapped in a system with medicine and psychiatry. There's a pecking order. Psychiatry comes first, so you have to study Freud, you have to study psychiatry to be a helper. I went to support groups. We went to peer-to-peer training. And what peer-to-peer is, it's a comforting. Hey, you need some comfort. You need an arm, a sister, a brother. Put your arm around you. You're hurting. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not healing. But those that have been abused are not getting that comfort from a mental health counselor or a psychologist. It's cold. It's a cold atmosphere. You got 50 minutes. Please tell me your stuff. Okay, I'll see you in 2 weeks. If not, you know. So it's the peer-to-peer was more family-oriented, you know. We're all sort of family. We can put our arms around each other. A mental health counselor cannot do that with you. We're going to only have contact with you in the office. We're not there to pick you up, take you around. We're not there. No, this is different, ethical, professional. Much colder, much more distant. So a lot of people in abuse had to find something, so they started their peer-to-peer. And what actually happened was they were getting wonderful, you know, you support me, I support you, I believe you, I can talk to you, you'll cry with me and things, but it does no healing. Because once the meeting's over with, the system is still there. The memories are still there. You just had some comfort. So I sat in grief support groups and comforting, got peer-to-peer training. Okay? What I tend to do, what I was, I become your mama. Because according to spirituality, the anchor of the soul is love. Once the soul and the spirit are anchored in love, that no matter, and I would say, no matter what you've done, what has been done to you, what you do, no matter, doesn't matter. There's a love that's bigger than you. And I'm bringing it. And I adopt everybody. Will you be my spiritual child? Once that happens, they give me the right to be their mother. And I speak the words that a mother should speak, and I can discipline them. Take some, they're ready. and then the healing deep on the spiritual side can start happening. And how the pattern's supposed to work is the spirit is supposed to get healed first. The spirit is like a husband, the covering. It is to look at the soul, with the biological brain, as its helpmate, sort of its bride, and care for it and love it, guide it and teach it. Spirit gets it first, is what I learned. Humans, the soul, with that knowledge, that light, then the soul releases that out in music, in talking, out through the physical body. That's what I had to learn, the pattern. And mental health counseling, they stay in the biological body with drugs, you know, which good psychiatric drugs in the biological brain to adjust the chemistry, the neurochemistry. And if you study the brain, you can study memories, and you can study the light, and you can study the frontal lobe. They used to do lobotomies. They'd go up the nose, and they'd scrape, and they'd, so you'd feel nothing. Certain parts, like your eyesight, is in the back of your brain. Certain things are happening. You have to study the five senses. You have to understand how everything works from the five senses going into the brain, how it's stored in neurochemical, electrical systems, how memories work. So I would read books, and I just kind of stayed at home a lot. But are there any questions from anybody? I don't know. I see what time it is here. Penelope, you got anything you want to say?
Yes. Actually, I do, Pastor Deborah. You had talked early on in the show about, you said you hadn't been very good at it, but I don't know if that's actually true. But in terms of child development and a child being born into a multi-generational a family that has, you know, multi-generational cycles of abuse. So uh-huh. a baby is born into this cycle.
Uh-huh.
And in terms of that first 3 years of 0 to 3 years old and the development, because you mentioned the stifling of the development in children to become healthy, adjusted adults,